Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We are your hosts. I am Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
Each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros.
Hey, we know some of those people.
We have one of those people with us today.
Like live?
Hey, like live. Oh, there she is.
It's Steph.
It's Steph. You want to introduce our guest?
Yes. So our guest today is the one, the only, Stephanie Tinsley of Tinsley PR. She represents, yes, Steph is rad. She represents a number of awesome game companies, including Devolver Digital and Piranha Games. And our topic today is what to do and what not to do to promote your game when the world is ending.
The world is, hold on a sec. Can you rewind for a second? Because I wasn't aware the world was ending.
You're the one that wrote the show notes, fam.
That's
a tall order. I mean, I feel like PR at the end of the world is maybe like the most.
I don't know. I still want to read it.
So yeah. I mean, the impetus for this was I hate reading. I mean, obviously, we've been getting emails from every online store we've ever visited, whether or not we've purchased from them. Every restaurant
we haven't flown on in 15 years.
Yes,
it's true.
I think I got an email from Pan Am.
yes.
I understood this reference even as a Canadian.
Yes. No, it's tough out there for a pimp right now. For real.
Wow.
There's no book for this. I mean, there are crisis PR.
Steph? Is this crisis PR? Like
a global crisis. Yeah, I would call it a global crisis.
Someone made an oopsie doopsie on Twitter.
Totally different. I mean, there are crisis PR agencies. There's no, there's no sort of like booklet for like how to navigate when the two most important North American, possibly global trade shows in your industry get canceled. You know, I mean, I don't know in the 15, 16 years I've been doing this, I've never seen anything like this on a personal or professional level. And it's in addition to navigating how just scary this is for the world and my family and me personally, you know, now you sort of have to steward this new world communication strategy for clients who are sort of, you know, who may make the mistake of tweeting out like, you know, some cute way of leveraging a disaster to sell more of their product. And it's sort of, you know, there's on the front lines everywhere, PR people are like, don't do that.
So I need to, in full disclosure, tell you that once we are done recording this podcast and it's fully produced, I have so many USB sticks from press events that what I'm going to do is I'm going to clear one of them out. I'm going to copy this podcast to a USB stick. I'm going to clear out a drawer in our house, probably in our kitchen, and I'm just going to have that USB stick so that when somebody wanders through this house in the post-apocalyptic landscape, this will be our contribution to their environmental narrative. This will be the audio log they find from us.
That's really good. I like
that's
that a lot.
Boring-ass video game. If you have to listen to a PR person talk on a podcast about navigating murky waters through a virus crisis, then I feel bad for whoever has to play that video
Look,
game.
They can't all be winners.
Live that life.
They can't all I'm be winners. Saying.
They can't all be winners.
I give that game a 4 out of 10.
So I want to talk a little bit, and we have had this conversation about GDC and what are the immediate effects? And we talked about this on our episode zero yesterday, that there are direct effects and there are indirect effects. What are the effects you're seeing now that your clients are tackling, and what do you think we're going to see kind of down the road as a ripple?
That's a really good question, and I want to answer that, but first I want to ask you, Mike, directly, why did you cancel
it wasn't just him. It was him and Schreier and Devolver Digital.
Which is one of your clients.
Fucking trifecta ever.
That tweet. So for those of you who are listening who haven't seen this tweet, someone very angrily accused Devolver Digital, Jason Schreier, news editor at Kotaku, and me of canceling E3. Like we had planned. Like outright said, you planned it this way. Totally. Boy, if I could plan things like that, nothing would be safe.
That's like Machiavellian nonsense.
Working, like, if I was that good at shit, do you think I wouldn't have like found a way to make enough money to retire at this point?
I would change my name to Ernst Blofeld, and I would have a hairless cat and a lot of money, and I would tell Mr. Bond.
No, seriously.
But it was the weirdest thing. Like, I feel for the guy because clearly he's upset by the cancellation of E3,
which is understandable.
It is, but
is it?
The way that rolled out, okay. And we kind of talked about...
I mean...
We'll get there.
Listen.
Hold on. Okay. We'll get there.
We're going to need more than a half an hour.
No.
So, listen. So, I think I have a very rudimentary explanation for why the three of you got put his tweet. This is building bridges that might go that might connect to nowhere and may, you know, maybe just pure speculation on my part. But I will say, as someone whose job it is to be extraordinarily online, the way that rolled out that night, and it could just be, I mean, so if you recall, I was upstairs in quarantine in my house
with
102 something fever. This all rolled out. Everyone was talking about this in hush-hush whispers via DMs, via emails, via text messages. Nothing was on social media until Devolver came out and said, cancel your flights and hotels.
They didn't
elaborate
past
that. And I can neither confirm nor deny the intent behind that. I will not speculate. But I think that was followed very quick by your tweet, because you had been working sources all day.
Yep.
I mean, I had started receiving text messages around 10, 11 a.m. that morning. And then Schreier, who is the, if there's a big story that's going to break, like he's my money's on Jason. You know what I mean? So he clearly had been working his sources, and I think maybe, and I didn't really see the timeline after that because I think I passed out.
I was glued to my phone because I'm like, I used a lot of detail here. Like, it was one of those things where
it was the three of you went out first with that.
Klepek, so like know. Patrick was right behind, and it was interesting because I quote tweeted the Devolver tweet and said, yep. And I think that was all I said. And then I said, you know what? I need to be more specific about that because this is really vague. And then I was very specific in a way that I wouldn't have been if I were reporting out the story for an outlet. And I got very specific and I'm like, this is what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that tomorrow morning is going to be the announcement. And I didn't go with a specific time, which I'm glad because they were 2 hours later than I thought they were. And then I said, cancel your plan. So, and then all of those, the thing was, I think it was the Devolver tweet, my tweet, and Jason's tweet all got into the Resetera post about that, which is why that guy, like, grouped us all together.
Right. See, now that makes, we're getting to the bottom of gamer anger.
Oh, that's going to take way more than a half hour.
I know. I mean, it did seem to me that after I read that tweet, because I was just like, what? That's absurd. But the texts I had been getting that morning were very much like, it's canceled. They're talking to their people now. I'm sure that wasn't a decision that anyone there took lightly. And rolling something like that out has to just be an enormous Herculean, you know, Sisyphean task, really. Because no matter how well you roll something like that out, you're just going to be pissing people off. It's just going to be chaos. And I had actually heard it was going to be that day, but they didn't get it together all the way to the end of the day and sort of missed their deadline. And so they sort of punted it to the next morning. But if I was a fan and didn't have any insight into sort of, you know, not insight into how these things work, but just more of, I'm just closer to it, really. Mm-hmm. I can see how all of a sudden this handful of industry insiders, Devolver's not a ESA insider by any means. They've always been across the street at because that's a whole other podcast. The one time Mike Wilson. No, okay. So I could see from like someone who has just no idea how any of that would possibly work, even remotely, could look at like a few key people in the industry that are highly visible, highly public, and then say, oh, well, if they were on the fence, then these guys like spoiled it for everyone. And so, you know, fuck you guys. I wish we, you know, any single person had that power. The only person that, the only people that have that power are like the PSA, you know?
Yep.
They're high profile members and them and they're, you know, I don't even know how it all works. It's like, it's Wonka's chocolate factory as far as I'm except like not chocolate.
Are you, hold on. I need to be very clear. Are the people that work at the, are they?
I mean, like maybe, I'm not entirely sure.
So you don't comment on rumors or speculation?
We don't comment on, I don't know. But yeah, it was a weird time. But let's get back to your question. I mean, what was your question?
one of the things that we talked about yesterday was, you know, both the immediate and the ripple effects of how these event cancellations are going to start to affect folks that are working in the industry, whether or not they're making games or they're publishing games or they're, you know, promoting games. So we want to know like how you're seeing things from your end. What have been some of the immediate effects and what are you seeing? What are you anticipating as ripple effects for clients?
Oh yeah. There's just so much to unpack there. The most immediate effect was my eye twitch that I developed on the floor. Partly from stress of having to get on an airplane and fly to Boston at the very, you know, beginning of the big wave of infections in this country, but also because we were navigating the same situation with GDC from the PAX show floor, where it was all hush hush whispers, and earlier that day, I started hearing little rumblings in my in my text messages and my DMs about GDC possibly being canceled. Now, both GDC and E3 are tentpole shows, the PR. For our clients, we have every single executive, developer, creator that we work with on the ground in San Francisco for GDC. A lot of them use GDC as the platform to announce new games, showcase new games. We had a variety of events scheduled throughout the city for the entire week. Devolver Digital specifically uses GDC not so much as a marketing vehicle, but as a vehicle to they use GDC in the way it was intended. I mean, they meet with developers, they attend talks, they give talks. They are in pitch meeting after pitch meeting after pitch meeting for new games that they might sign. Developers from all over the world fly to San Francisco to meet with as many people they can. Devolver's obviously one of the main publishers are going to get a smaller, I don't want to say super small. They're doing a lot bigger games these days, but it's still short of AAA. So we had a series of suites set up for them to have those meetings, not just with developers. I mean, they're meeting with Sony and Nintendo and Apple and you know, all of the major players. And a lot of deals get signed and a lot of deals are done and a lot of deals are made. And it is devastating for a company if they don't have the types of resources that a more established publisher has. So for us, for, you know, at my team, we had to, from the PAX show floor, look into that 30-day window of hotel reservations, of flights, of what's cancelable, what's not. Not just for Devolver stuff, but also, I mean, our clients at Modus, we had a showcase planned for their spring lineup, their 2020 lineup. That all just went right out the door. We had another client there actually actively, as we speak right now, doing a series of back-to-back-to-back virtual demos with rescheduled media that we were supposed to see at GDC for an unannounced game.
Oh, wow.
That is actually being announced in 2 days alongside a Kickstarter. And imagine you have been working a year plus on your next project. You're bootstrapping this project from the success of your last project, and you've got a full schedule, 3-day media appointments, and then all of a sudden they pull the plug on GDC. Holy shit. What do you do? So those are the types of things we were faced with on the show floor. So that ripple effect was not, it's by no means a trickle down effect for me at Ground Zero for that particular weekend. It was like a tidal wave of just madness. Mm-hmm. You know, we work with a lot of folks that come in from Europe, and they're all smaller developers. They're looking, you know, any exposure they're able to get is so important. They're not a big AAA publisher that can just sort of like, you know, swat media requests away with a bat because it doesn't fit their corporate narrative that they're going for at that moment because they're so huge. It's very much the opposite. We work really hard to come up with compelling narratives and work on engaging products so that the press will pay attention to our folks. And so for us, when something like that happens, it's absolutely devastating. I mean, it was the equivalent of just an absolute tidal wave coming the rest of our 20 when GDC went down. And then when you added E3 on top of that, just 3 weeks later, I'm underwater with what the hell we're going to do. We're still in daily planning meetings about sort of how we're going to move forward, how these games are going to be promoted. It's a really weird time. It's a weird time for everybody.
So let me ask you this, because I feel like the challenges of GDC and the potential crunch on disposable income that might pull as consumers without work or reduced hours or so all of this stuff. So there's this desperation that then is created to sell. But at the same time, you and PR especially need to be the voice of reason, be like, no, we can't do that. We can't go out and say, hey, you're stuck at home for the virus? Buy our games. Because then, totally. You know.
Yeah.
So what is the
calculus? It comes across as ghoulish.
It does.
Yeah.
And what is.
We get accused of being ghouly anyway. And so when someone else like does that, I'm always like, you know, I'm the one on Twitter that's like, get back in line, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just comes from a thoughtless place, and it comes from a almost like a desperation.
What is the calculus from where you're sitting on how to, if at all, combine what you have to offer, whether that's for sale or for giveaway or anything like that, with the current situation?
It's tough. But I think it all stems from respecting your audience. It comes from starting from a place of respect, because you have to respect that there's people that are going through a lot of hardship right now.
Yep.
Not everybody is able to just say, oh, forget it. I'm just going to sit in my house and ignore the world and play video games. A lot of people are wondering how they're going to pay rent next month. A lot of people, how they're going to go get groceries.
Yeah.
And when you're in a situation, and that's not everybody, right? But that's the situation a lot more people are finding themselves in right now than they
especially
were
folks
months ago.
Yeah, especially folks that are economically vulnerable to begin with.
Right.
They're in a position where if their rent is not being forgiven or their mortgage is forgiven, they're going to have to make choice. Do I keep the lights or do I get food for my family? And you can't even factor in the luxury items.
No, you can't. And that's any market downturn, really.
Oh, for sure.
This has come so suddenly.
Oh yeah.
For so many people, it's very reminiscent to me of 2008, 2009, where one week everything was fine and the housing market was at all-time highs, and the next week, you know, we had the Dow and everything had, and S&P and Nasdaq had fallen off a cliff. So this is very. I'm kind of sitting here being like, okay, I've done this both times. Or I should say the first time, I don't think we felt the financial and economic effects in the video game industry until we were a further away ripple, if that makes any sense. We did not feel the immediate effects of that. I personally am an extraordinarily small business. We work with a client base that's international. We have clients in Australia, Canada, France, Spain, UK, Germany, you know, Croatia. So that was a global recession, but at the same time, our immediate impact, my financial impact, was almost unscathed at that time.
And to be clear, we're talking about the housing crisis.
The housing, yes, in 2008. In 2008, 2008, 2009, we started seeing recovery in 2010. I was busier than ever, thankfully, and I attribute that to the fact that we're remote to begin with. We have the advantage of when we have low overhead. We don't charge what big agencies charge. You don't need a team of 13 to launch an indie game. Mm-hmm. You know, at least on the PR side.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, creators were still creating, especially out of Europe. You have things like healthcare, and you don't have to, you know, the governments are far more forgiving in more democratically socialist countries. So you have a bigger well to draw from in terms of folks that are able to choose a creative career path than, say, in a staunchly capitalistic culture like the United States.
Oof. God, this is such a heavy topic. And
no, I know. It sucks, too. And you know, I have to say, I am, the older I've gotten, I have realized how fortunate I am and how lucky I am to the position I'm at. I mean, I'm well stocked with groceries. My family is able to stay home. My business isn't necessarily going to be interrupted in a negative way, because you need good communications and good marketing right now in the video games, and it's more than ever. It's a shitty / wonderful. There's just nothing's, you know, the older you get, the more you realize nothing's black and white. This is exactly that. Mm-hmm. This is just like many shades of like stupid gray, where I wish it was a lot different for a lot of different people. And I'm just very, very lucky.
Before we get to our listener question, which Amanda has, I want to ask you for your one piece of advice for any developers that are listening, for any other PR folks that might, with regard to doing PR specifically around the current situation. What's your thought? Like, what's your recommendation? Should people just stay away from it entirely? Is there a way to do it tactfully? Where's your head at on that?
Well, you still have to promote your product. I mean, you have a responsibility to your, either your game that you've spent the last number of years making, your brand, whatever it may be. You still have a responsibility to be successful. And whatever that means to you, whether it's making enough money on your game to go make your next game, or whether it's making enough money to retire, you have your goals, right? So for us, it's, we're not telling anybody to halt their marketing plans. That's not where my head's at. That's not where we're at in our campaign cycles. What we are doing is becoming a lot more strategic about it. We're trying to attack it from more creative sides. And what that means is pivoting to remote demos, pivoting to content that you can get to the media in a manner that is safe and efficient, and most importantly, useful to them. That's the media doesn't exist to serve your game. No. The media is serving its audience. It's serving its readership, right? Mm-hmm. So if you all of a sudden had everyone halt their marketing plans, the media has nothing. You know, it's a cycle, right?
Yeah,
so
it
if
is.
They have nothing to talk about, I mean, they'll always come up with like stupid crap to talk about.
10 games to play while you're quarantined.
Totally, I'm sure that's already been
listicles.
Written at, like, 50 times. Yeah, yep. Listicles are great.
The Division.
But at the
Last
same
of
time,
Us. Plague Inc.
Yeah, wow. Plague Inc. There you go. But I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like they're going to, it's nothing, the fundamental relationship has not changed. They still want interesting and engaging story to bring to their audience.
Yep.
And I am the person that can help bring that to them via the people that we are, you know, working with on the client side. That hasn't changed. We're still doing remote demos. We're still sending out builds. I don't recommend anybody stop trying to market their game by any means. I just think at a time like this, you have to be very aware of how you're, if you are using an international tragedy to promote your brand, you're doing it wrong. There has to be a sensitivity there. There has to be an awareness. You know, you have to read the room. Mm-hmm. And good PR folks can help you do that. Good publishers can help you do that. Picking and choosing your times is more important than ever. And I think as we move through the next couple of months, you're going to see the same amount of previews, the same amount of interviews. We're just having to navigate it in a very different way now.
That's a great answer.
That's an amazing, this is why.
But it's the truth. It's the truth.
We appreciate the truth.
We do.
You can't handle the truth.
No, nobody can handle the truth right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, man, it's such a serious time, though. No one's really happy. No one's, you know, and there's so much to celebrate still. You know, I mean, we're all now taking, I mean, it took the government way longer than it should have to come around to this in a very serious manner, but it happened, and it's, and we're slowing the response, and things are gonna be okay. They're gonna be okay. And I think that there are things that we can still celebrate and find joy in, and video games have always been that thing. And that, and now more than ever, that shouldn't stop.
That's a great segue to our listener, Julie.
Yeah, it is. So one of the questions that we got, that was kind of our unofficial question, but something that we've seen.
Our mentions have been full of it.
Yes.
Well, our mentions are always full of it, but.
Yeah. But we don't need to go into that. But one of the things that we've been seeing as a trend, and even something that Mike and I have said to one another wistfully.
And I've jokingly tweeted it. Like, I don't think it's real. Like, but it was a joke. It was wistful.
It was wistful. Yes, it was. So we've got a couple of big games coming out this week, right? We've got Nintendo releasing Animal Crossing, and we've got Bethesda releasing Doom Eternal. So one of the things that folks have been clamoring for is they're like, okay, but why aren't you guys releasing the game early? So from your perspective, you know, how, like, why is something like that, like releasing a game early for any reason, or late for crying out loud, why that is such a challenging thing when you already have a fairly concrete, and especially at this point, a super concrete release date?
Well, let me ask you this. I don't even know what due release date is.
They're both Friday. That's the cutest thing that's been going on, is there's been
so
this love affair.
Literally, it's a matter of days?
Yeah. Literally a matter of days,
everyone
friend.
Relax. Yeah. Everyone remain calm.
I don't think anyone can do that right now.
Last week when everybody started, like, when things started getting bad here.
Yes.
When people started getting realistic about what was going on, everybody's like, I could be crossing right now, just put it right in my veins. And other people are like, I want to rip and tear until it's done. Give me Doom Eternal.
It's a very good juxtaposition of those two games coming out at the same time.
Have you seen on Twitter? You seen on Twitter how, like, Bethesda especially has been, like, pouring Doom flavored love all over Animal Crossing? It's the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I posited on Twitter, like, you know, PR plans and marketing spends and obviously the logistics, because these are still retail releases as well as digital. It's not like flipping the Switch early at retail, especially when you've got everything on at retail. But yeah, as Amanda said, like, interested in your thoughts about, like, what goes into releasing a game, and why might that be affecting the, like, not just saying, okay, fine, have it a week or...
Right. Well, it's not Star Wars on demand.
Well, that's also a second release, too, right? Like, I think, like, it... Obviously, we're starting to see now movie theaters, or...
Universal's
releasing, like, $20 rentals.
Yeah.
I think that's really neat.
And I think it's smart.
It's a good way to help... You know, because but also something like going to the cinema is it's a group activity.
It's
something
now
you
it's
have
impossible
to
because they're
exactly
all
because they're all closed. So it's a little bit different in the sense that is a shared activity that you have to go to a place to do versus getting a game, which is
locking the door and telling other people to bother you.
So you mean the way I've been handling Civ?
The way you've been Civing, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. So yes, that. Mm-hmm. So now that the cat's out of the bag about my newfound slash...
Honestly, sometimes she won't even take the turn. She'll just listen to the Canadian folk songs being played through her headset.
I really miss my own country. Like, a lot. I miss Canada very much.
To answer your question, I mean, it's not as easy as putting content on a server and then lining it up to go out through store, even digitally. It's easy to throw something up on eBay, you know, to sell. It's the same thing if you're a gigantic content distributor to call up Amazon and say, you're going to do this for Amazon Video, and, you know, then times that by like four or whatever, like Netflix or Twitch or wherever else you want that content to go.
Sure.
Which, if Twitch was smart, they would have absolutely done that. Subscribe to this channel and get like, you have physical product. You have physical product that was in the process of being shipped maybe last week, coming from the factories, right? Mm-hmm. You have pre-orders. I'm going to imagine that you have to honor, and if you don't have physical product to put on store shelves, within, I mean, that stuff just, it's just not as fast as digital. Like, this is human controlled physical distribution of goods. You need, you know, you've got to get the product created. You got to get it on the truck. You've got to get it to the warehouse. You have to get it from the warehouse to the GameStop. You have to get the GameStop distribution house to get it to the different stores. Then you have to get the manager to unbox it and get it ready to go on the shelves. There's all the marketing materials that are set to go out, like your pop-up stands and your t-shirts and whatever else they're selling. It's just, there's so much human involvement that when you have a potential delay for whatever reason in the supply chain, and you're maybe rushing and scrambling to get those things even to the facilities, you can't just all of a sudden say, oh, if you bought it on digital, then we're just flipping the switch. Now you can buy it. Because like, if you pre-ordered it, however, everyone that bought it digitally gets to play it 5, 6, 7 days early. And you're like, oh, I got to wait for my box copy. Like,
well,
that's,
well, and that's the thing.
That's a nightmare.
Well, the thing you're driving at, though, is that the relation, the publisher, the publisher, the developer, whoever it is that that's making that decision. In this case, we're talking two big publishers. Their relationships aren't just with the consumers. They have relationships, wholesalers, relationships,
channel,
retailers.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it goes all the way down the channel. And, you know, there was a time where Bethesda or Nintendo would not want to piss off GameStop. But now I think it's also, hey, we also know that if we do this right now at this specific time, we're going to be pissing off GameStop, obviously. But Target and Best Buy and anybody and Amazon. Amazon's a big
but
one
a
you don't want to piss off.
A huge part of your consumer base. Like a huge part of your consumer base that wanted the extra special collector thing, you know? So it's just not as easy as what they did with Star Wars, putting it on sale, or what they did with... what got released early?
Frozen 2.
Frozen 2.
Frozen 2.
But again, we're also talking about second run, essentially, the home release. And we're talking about an environment where digital is always, or has now been for a number of years, I think it is or so, where digital has been staggered 2 weeks in advance of physical.
Yes.
So that just moving that date up, again, doesn't create the same friction as it does in the video game industry where it's day and date.
Yeah, so I mean, there's just too many other moving parts, not to mention the fact that it's close to the release date. And
so don't panic is what you're saying?
Everyone remain calm. But also, most importantly, this is not a situation in the Western world that is going to have resolved itself by Friday. You know what I mean? Like, we are not going to be out of our houses. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go out on a limb here and just publicly say that by Friday, I think we're going to be under national lockdown.
I think it's the case, too.
Steph, thank you so much for sitting with us today. This has been really insightful, and we always love talking to you.
Absolutely.
It's always great. I mean, Steph has sat with us on panels before talking about video game marketing, and man, we have stories about those panels, too.
Yeah.
That's not for today.
No, I was really sad. I only saw you... I mean, I usually see you guys a lot during PAX. I saw you at the Devolver booth, I think, maybe for just a couple
of seconds.
Minutes.
Yeah, it was not a lot.
And, I mean, I think that whole second day, I didn't even get to the show floor until 1 p.m. because we had to start canceling every single event we had and calling venues and hotels. And I mean, I'm not kidding. I was in it.
I believe you.
PAX. It was a lot to handle, and while that was going on, you know, just on top of everything. And fortunately for us, I mean, I've heard the horror stories of people in hotels and flights and things at GDC. I think Andrea Renee said that she was out a lot of
She was really hurt. I know that she was really hurt.
It really, like, it just, we were really fortunate to have had refundable everything. And I think I'm eating like maybe... $600-$800. Like, it's not
that could
even
be
that.
A lot worse.
It could have been so much worse. And I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to talk to you guys more. I just you know, but this is great. I mean, I love what you guys are doing. I'm psyched to have been one of your first guests about
this.
I hope
you are our first guest.
Oh, woo-hoo-hoo.
Yes, you are literally our first
this
guest.
Yesterday was episode zero. This is episode one. You are our first guest.
I should have said something way more controversial.
you still have time, Steph.
I still have time. I mean, I almost just did. And then, like, the whole other side of my brain was like, don't mention that guy's name.
Okay, so right now, on each episode for the foreseeable future and as often as we can, we are doing an indie spotlight.
Today's indie spotlight is Jens Kooi from the Netherlands. Jens reached out when I opened up my Twitter to signal boost some indies who were working on cool games, who were in development, and his game, Fred the Rubber Ducky, stuck out to me, and we reached out to Jens to be part of our indie spotlight for our first official episode.
First of all, Mike, Amanda, thanks so much for having me on your podcast. It's an absolute pleasure.
Oh, it's great to have you here, Jens. Thank you so much. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your game?
So the game I'm developing is called Fred the Rubber Ducky. As the title suggests, it's about a rubber ducky that's tired of being in a bathtub every day and decides to leave his home looking for his destiny. It's a complete handcrafted pixel art world that I hope triggers the nostalgia for 30-somethings like myself, but also brings a joy to younger gamers that are into 2D platformers. It's an adventure that's inspired by the games I used to play when I was a child. Super Mario World, Donkey Kong Country, Sonic the Hedgehog, and other 16-bit early 90s games, I guess. But it's also kind of an homage to beautiful games that are still being released in this genre today. I'm thinking about Ori and the Will of Wisps and Hollow Knight Silksong. These are the guys that inspired me to pick up game development again.
Were you planning on attending E3 or GDC? And how have those cancellations affected you? And what is your perspective on what's happening right now with all of the cancellations around the industry?
A lot of inspiration I find in watching GDC talks online. I do hope for all the best for all the people that put up so much hard work into organizing these events. Watching GDC and E3 getting canceled doesn't really affect me personally at this moment because I live in the Netherlands. But the same is going on for local events here as well. I really regret the fact that so many talented indie developers will have to miss their opportunity to meet all these wonderful people. I'm sure many had high hopes for pitching ideas and getting publishing deals. So yeah, I really hope to visit some of the conferences this summer. So I really hope for everyone this crisis will be dealt with effectively and soon.
How far along in development are you right now? And what is the biggest need you have to move your project to the next phase?
I've started development only since January of this year, so you could say I'm still only just starting. On the other hand, my aim is to release this year, so I'm already well on the way. At the moment, I'm working on the core gameplay mechanics, level design, as well as the main theme song. While exploring the various platforms I hope to release my game on, my biggest need right now is for some patience, I guess. Development alone goes rather slowly, and I'm really excited to work on my first title, so I can hardly wait for its release. On the other hand, I'm struggling to get some effective marketing going. I'm not a marketeer, so finding the right way to spread the word has been a challenge for me. So I guess I'm really thankful for you guys for inviting me here.
It's absolutely our pleasure, Jens. Thank you so much for sharing your work with us. Really interested to see more about Fred the Rubber Ducky. Please let us know, where can people find you online? And if you have a Steam page or an itch.io page where people can wishlist your game, please tell us what that is.
Right now, I'm working on getting my Steam page up. So until that happens, you can find me on Twitter. But since my name is hardly pronounceable in English, I guess it's easier to check out fredtherubberducky.com.
Jens, thank you so much for sharing your work with us. Can't wait to find out more about Fred the Rubber Ducky when you get further along in development.
It looks so awesome.
It does. It looks so good. So that about wraps us up for today's episode. If you want to be featured on our Indie Spotlight, all you have to do is send us a DM. Our Twitter is @virtualeconcast. Let us know that you're interested. We'll arrange the whole thing. Alternatively, you can email us at podcast@fsquared.biz. We have 3 more shows scheduled for this week. We're starting off doing them daily. We'll figure it out. Our guest tomorrow is attorney Brandon Huffman, the founder of Ode Media.
On Thursday, we've got Matt Piscatella. And he's going to be joining us from NPD. He's a video game industry analyst and, like, incredibly super smart. And I'm pretty excited.
And on Friday, we have Victoria Tran, who's leader at Kickbox Games.
And the future lord of CM Decider on Twitter.
So thank you so much for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. This has been episode 1. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual EconCast. I am at Futterish, F-U-E-R-I-S-H.
And I'm at Amanda Farrow.
And Steph, where can people find you on the Twitters?
They can find me at Agent Tinsley, spouting various nonsense on the daily.
This is
it's good nonsense, though. I like that. It's personally my brand of nonsense that I enjoy having in my feed, which is why I've been following you on Twitter for, God, so many years. So many.
I love it. All right. Well, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. We're just going to wrap up here. You can subscribe to the show on our RSS feed at virtualeconomy.libsyn. That's libsyn.com/RSS. You can also listen to us on Stitcher, where you can do the show. Let us know what you think. We will be on Google, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify very soon. We're in the approval process. And if you have any questions, please email at podcast@fsquare.biz or hit us up on our Twitter. Your question be read.
It's definitely not live.
Live recorded.
It's likely not ever going to be live because we meander so much it's that true. I need to clean up the audio.
But yeah, your question might...
It might get read. So, we will be back tomorrow, where we will be talking with attorney Brandon Huffman. And in the meantime, wash your hands, stay hydrated, each other. We'll see you tomorrow.